You gotta get one of those computers that correct your levels and guilt.
Well, they don't actually create a hard drive. I had that plan to sell one ship without having a gas card. That's 20,000 worth of shit. All it does is just check every word in your
value. Provided you sell it close enough so that
it doesn't change anything. Anything it doesn't recognize, then you can go through and write out all the words, or you can have it flagged in the text and then go to the text and check to see whether you. And that word is misspelled, or whether you want to add it to your dictionary, whether you want to fix that word, or another thing.
Do you want to find a new word?
Yeah, you can add it to your supplemental, dictionary, or to the main dictionary itself. So I've already increased it, because it doesn't have God in it, and Jesus Christ, it doesn't have.
We should have misspelled
that. No, that check. It recognizes the word, but it's not in there. It's handy for finding where you forgot to put space in, or where you.
All you need to do is have one of those for Hebrew. For Hebrew words. Recognize you got a lot more problems.
Yeah, that's another problem.
Teach it the rule of Shua. Have it do the reductions for you. Have it do the reductions.
It's interesting to know in Hebrew, you've got the smaller, major vocabulary, basic vocabulary, smaller than English. But I think if you were to take all the various possible forms that you can see in the Hebrew language compared to English, a lot more. All the different vowel point changes, all the PLQ, you've got 144 forms for every verb, potential forms,
And how many verbs do you have?
Yeah, how many verbs, and so many of them.
At least 101.
Very
1,000 verbs, so you got 144,000 verbs alone.
Typological significance.
So you see each one of those as a separate vocabulary word.
That's
what I'm
saying.
And then with the nouns, with every noun with every possible form of pronoun suffix, obviously fingers and plurals, every construct form, and you could really have quite a number of different possibilities. And then the prepositions, considering each of the inseparable prepositions, you could have every word could have a but on it, so you have to double for a but and then a but and a cut,
And then the Bagaka font, they can change depending on what the previous vowel was.
Just change the actual physical
letter. Yeah. Just consider what a marvelous thing your brain is if you're able to learn all of it.
Oh, yeah. You can even try to teach it a computer.
Oh, you imagine. Yeah.
I was once doing a very creative try to teach a computer three handwriting numbers to teach it.
Oh, yeah. I was wondering how they do that.
Well, you have to follow rules. You have to put in a certain box, and there are two certain letters that you have to.
But don't they have zip code receipt reading machines in the mail department that'll read the zip code on the handwritten?
No, I don't.
They don't.
Yeah, they call them a ZMT terminal operator. All they do is sit there, and the letter comes in front of them for 1 second. They get it, do the numbers, put it in, next one comes.
Oh.
They work them for an hour, and then they have 10 minutes off.
No, they don't need it.
That would be a job, though, to get a computer to do that. You were working at all the variations and style people can't
write it. That's right,
I can't do that with my own brain.
Yeah. It seems so easy for us, but we try to teach you the computer.
So take heart.
Funny enough, how hard it is to read people's writing. And we're just dealing with numbers.
Well, that's a 26 today. Justice and coordinate. The imperfect with or without slight modification may be used in an indirect imperative sense in all persons. Now, notice the term indirect imperative. The idea is that you're not making a command necessarily. However, you're putting a polite, if it's second person, it's either a polite way in some sense, or in some sense it could even be stronger. It's like, you will do this, it almost depends on intonation, exactly how you're going to come out with it. But But the interesting thing is that in the first person and in the third person, there's something analogous to this. Now, in English, we have the same thing, but we do it completely different way. So we have an auxiliary verb let or something of that nature that we use for the what the Hebrew called just the order. So look at the examples here. First, with a third person, yishlach can mean he will send, just as in imperfect, or let him send. Let him send. So the same form could be understood as let him send. And there you get what's happening is that there's a wish being expressed by a person with regard to the action of another person in the third person. He's not confronting the person and telling them directly, send. He's not getting command, but he's making a wish expressed. Let him send this or let him do that, etc. It's expressing a wish or desire on the part of the person who's making the statement. And so that's where you get almost an imperative sense to it. It's expressing one's desire. And then tishlach would be you will send or may you send. So it's either just an explicitly imperfect of a statement about a future action, you will send, or may you send. May you send. That's another possibility as a mild imperative or indirect imperative, let's say. And then eshlach, I shall send, or it could be let me send. Let me send. Your context is going to have to decide your differences here, although we will see that for the cohortative here, there will be a form that's often used to designate this. But because that's perhaps harder always to tell from the context. Mm-hmm. But let me send, it's expressing a wish on the part of yourself. It's almost a command to yourself in a way. It's let me do this, you know. Self-deliberation sometimes is what you see there. Let us make men learn. Okay. But that's really what it is. Let us make men our image would be a first person plural cohortative of an idea. And I can't remember now whether it's got the cohortative in it or not. I don't think it does. But I'll double check it. So you'll know after you read the next part of the book here. What's the form? It should begin with a nun. Come on, Tom. When it's a third person where you're expressing a wish or desire for somebody else to do something, you know, let him stand or let him go or whatever, that would be just called justice. So the justice is for the third person. In the verse we have studied so far, thus far, these are identical in form to the imperfect. So far we haven't seen any distinction between the justice form and the imperfect form. Third, so for our purposes now, justice is just the same as the third person in imperfect form. No different. Now, there will be verbs coming up later on. We get more complexity to work with a list of justice form. Also, there'll be a slight style point change or something that happens, depending on, you know, especially hollow verbs and things like that. So we will see some slight distinctions in the justice form later on. But so far, there's no difference in the verse we've had so far. Then the first person indirect imperative, called the cohortative, is usually marked with the suffix a on the imperfect. Usually marked that way. It's not always marked that way. It makes it easier when it is marked that way, of course. So if you compare these, eshlach, I shall send, although it could be let me send, but more likely you'd see eshlacha and let me send. Eshlacha. So
is it stronger or let me send when it's got the common?
Yes, when it's got the common say, then there's no doubt that it's covertative. When it doesn't have the common say, then it could be covertative or imperfect, more likely to be imperfect. But it could be either one. But when you have a common say, then now there's no doubt. It just removes the ambiguity and it's got to be imperfective form. So when you see something with common say on there, that's definitely be imperfective form. That would be let me send, would be I will send. And then the same thing happened in the plural forms. Nishlach would be we shall send, or possibly let us send. But nishlacha would definitely be let us send. Okay, now note that the vowel of the imperfect is regularly reduced to shwa before the suffix. And the vowel of the imperfect is either a patak or a kolam, in this particular case, a patak. So you don't normally think of pataks or kolams reducing. Pataks are already short and kolam is supposed to be unchangeable. So this is unusual. It's not predictable by normal rule of reduction that you've already seen, but it happens nonetheless. So you just have to learn this as a pattern that takes place. So that stem vowel of the imperfect will, in fact, shorten in these covertative forms.
What's the second person called?
Well, the second person isn't called anything, really. If it's imperative, you usually use the term imperative for the second person form, because you're making a command. But when they use an imperfect form, then I guess you'd call it an indirect imperative or something, but there's not too much else to it. There's no special form for it as such. Normally, you should use the imperative form when you're going to deal with second person.
So an indirect imperative is kind of a more of a subjunctive imperative type of idea?
Well,
I want you to do this, and I'm asking you to. It's more than just, I don't care if you do or not, but I'm not going to exactly require it of you.
It's often form. Now, in the Old Testament, you'll try to see statements sometimes where God will say, oh, that they would serve me, and that type of thing. That would be adjusted form in the Hebrew. And in English, we're translating it very much like a subjunctive. In fact, in Greek, you would probably use subjunctive for a good number of these instances. So there's a lot of interplay between these forms. They're not necessarily synonymous, though. I wouldn't want to say that adjusted or formative is synonymous with subjunctive. It's just that one of the functions of subjunctive in English is to render situations like this. So, and you have also an auxiliary verb let here, in addition.
More like a command subjunctive.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, it's an indirect. I see what you're saying there, especially with justice and coordinative, and also with the indirect imperative part. It's not as strong a command in the sense that it's not being stated. It's expressing wish and desire, a strong wish and desire, but not necessarily somebody with authority who's clamping down and saying this will be, and you shall do this. That would be more like to be a pure imperative form for that. And if you're talking about third person, it probably wouldn't be any different than just using an imperfect form and translating if that will happen, you know. So this gesture of coercion is expressing a wish, strong wish, desire, that sort of an attitude. Mm-hmm. Okay. And once we see the sequences, now we're talking about sequences of these things, that it can get a little bit better feeling for it. Let me see now. One more statement here. To note the vowel is regularly used to schwa, then the coordinate form may replace the normal imperfect in a perfect plus imperfect narrative sequence with no apparent change in meaning. So you may find that a coordinate form instead of a normal imperfect form, if you're dealing with a first person in a sequence or a series, in a sequence and series now, you may see this coordinate form and it being translated as though it were just a normal imperfect. So it kind of goes the other way, but it's only in a sequence that apparently occurs.
Have you done any investigation into
it? I'm not sure on this. That would be a hard, you know. What I should do next year is just take a list of these things and give you guys some assignments to track somebody down and say, how many times does this happen? It wouldn't be easy, but you can find a number of good, you wouldn't have to exhaustively look at everything. Those are the kinds of things that usually take very low priority on a person's time schedule. So we might have a special grad class formed of all the former Greek and Hebrew students to do some grammatical charting and so forth. And I think that would be very interesting.
Yeah.
I'll talk about
that.
Yeah. I mean, we've come up with enough questions like that about tracing it out and finding out, you know, is there justification for this or not? And we've run into enough skepticism when we're reading through these books and I think it works.
The only problem is we need a large enough body of people to know what anybody's talking about.
Yeah.
Make sure that nobody's going off the deep end.
Yeah, right. That's why it has to be restricted to former readers. Well, but bottom line is that I'm not certain about that. I haven't really looked at enough examples, and I doubt that there's probably a lot of examples where you have a series and the first person. Most of your series will be first person because they're historical narrative. So it's probably a stable point. Okay, section 107 sequences involving the third adjustment of the in meaning, these three form a single paradigm. Justice is third-person imperative, if you want to call it that way. Justice is third-person imperative, second-person, the inquiry is first-person. So, if you think of them all as the same thing, which is justice and third-person imperative are always the same thing, a paradigm of one particular thing, it might help. The sequences involving one are usually similar to or the same as sequences involving the others. The following three sequences are the most frequently met. Okay, three sequences here. Part and sequence A is imperative plus imperative. That's just stringing imperatives together. Imperatives may be listed one after the other and joined by the required regular form of the conjunction. So these are not using the special while consecutive form of the conjunction. Just the normal, average, everyday, run of the mill, with the schwa. Or to get who, of course, if the word begins like ushlach. So. This is and here's an example. You've got Shema, Ushlach, Wa'amot. Why does the Wa'amot have a Baba?
Rule of Shua.
Yeah, Rule of Shua. Okay. So, he happened to pick two verbs that use the unusual forms of the usual forms of the conjunction. So, that was done on purpose or not. But the point is, he's just using the normal form of the conjunction, not the wa plus the doubling, in other words. And what would be the form, for example, on this wa amod? What would the form look like if it were the wa consecutive form? But you can't double the I. How would it be different from this, or would it be? Okay, so you got some vote that it wouldn't be. Huh?
It wouldn't happen this way, either it would come and I wouldn't take it.
Well, I know, that's part of the trick.
Yeah.
But suppose it was an Aleph and it was a first person form, so let's just pretend for a while. There's still something I'm trying to get at. Let's make it an Aleph and make it a
comment, wouldn't you?
Yes, go to comment. You lengthen the comment because it's very lengthy. It doesn't happen too often because Aleph is the only imperfect prefix that you run into like that. But it would be. Okay.
Go back here.
Yes, I think it should be back here somewhere. The chapter on the sequences, the first time they were introduced to sequences, it should be to chapter 20.
108.
108, okay. Top of the page, third one down in the first column.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Y told. That's the only place that would come up. Okay. So imperatives that are strung together this way, it says verbs joined in this way may or may not be consequent on one another. So when you just list a series of imperatives, they may be consequent or they may not be. In other words, by consequent we mean that if they're consequent, it means that the first one happens first, then the next one happens, then the next one happens in time. But suppose you were giving command to somebody and you wanted them to do a bunch of things. And you say, I want you to go to the store and I want you to buy this and buy that and so forth. And you tell them all the things to buy, but you're not necessarily demanding that they buy them in that order. You know, they just buy them whatever order the aisles are and so forth, you know. But just telling them all things they need to buy or whatever, or a series of things to do, but you don't really care whether they do them in a particular order, you just want them all done. You just list all your commands and use the normal form of the law there to show that. Now, if on the other hand you do want to explicitly give a constitution or say that I want you to do this first, and then this, and then this, and then this, and then this. Then you come to series B here, and this is the way to do that. Imperative plus perfect. Now you go to a converted perfect form. So explicit constitution is expressed by the sequence, which is the analog of the imperfect plus perfect narrative sequence. So in other words, you can do the same thing with imperative as you did with the imperfect. You can start out with an imperative and then continue with converted perfect forms. Of course, the perfect form isn't going to get it's still going to use the normal form of the conjunction would. But the fact that it's a perfect form now is getting you this information that what you've done is you set the tenor by the first imperative, and then the rest of them are following, and it's consequent. Each one is consequent upon the previous one. So Shema Wishalachta, excuse me, Ra'amavta. Now you're using perfect forms to follow, and this means here and then stand and then stand. So this one is definitely sequential. One above may or may not be sequential. I mean, you're probably not interested in establishing a sequential point. In other words, if you gave a command like part series A, you would just give these commands and you wouldn't care whether the person did in that order or not. He may in fact do them in that order, but you're not demanding that. But in part B, series B, you would be in fact illustrating a sequential order of things. You're making a command and you want to do this and then do this and then do this and then do this. It's important to you that it's a sequence. So therefore you would use this type of situation, yes?
Just out of curiosity, what do we have as far as Genesis 1:1? Because he says, let there be this, and like a command for the point.
Oh, let there be, okay, yeah, those would be just imperative forms. Well, it'd probably be justice forms, actually, because it's third person, let there be. And you're not probably going to see any difference between the justice form, unless with that particular verb is a difference. The verb to be might have a difference in the justice than the, I think the Hebrew just says light be and light is, you know. Yeah, light be and light what? For the using the verb form.
God saw the light that it was good. You don't have the, you don't have enough of a,
Is it
sequence?
Is it or? Okay. I think that's a justice form. So,
in these sequences, you need to be a Hebrew.
Pretty much.
It's very simple in Hebrew, isn't it?
You need to be pretty much on a string.
Yeah. You can't really establish
about a bunch of things and then break it up by a whole bunch of.
If you have a different sentence for each command, so you're not going to see a series like this. You see a series when a command you start out and use a whole series of things right within that command, with, you know, talking to the same individual and all the rest. But if you start getting a series of different isolated commands to different individuals, so you're not going to see a series of that. Yeah,
I think I just saw one lady in 2 Kings 9 where Elisha sent one of the sons of the prophets to anoint Jehu.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know about the sequence yet.
Oh, yes, okay, and so you saw that in Hebrew, and,
uh-huh.
Okay, and it started with an imperative, and then you had perfect converted perfect.
Yes.
Okay, yeah, and it's important, and he's telling you to do this, and then do this, and then do this. It's very, very appropriate, yes.
These two, A and B, when it says imperative, does that mean second person, or does it mean
no,
imperative?
Well, what it means is your normal imperative forms. So he's using just these shortened imperative forms. If you go to, let's see here. It's hard to know whether you could. I suppose it would still be true. It would still be true if you used a regular second person imperfect form with this mild imperative or indirect imperative sense, because you're still setting up the same thing. A person could consider that. You had already had an imperfect plus converted perfect series, and it wouldn't be any different than that structurally. So I guess it really wouldn't matter, really. The only thing is that, and it wouldn't matter for the first one either, because you can talk about it. You can list imperfects without implying a constitution just by using the normal form of the conjunction, listing them together. So you could do it either way. So I guess it doesn't really come. It turns out it's a real important problem.
So this. Second person imperative is serving a dual function, whereas the third person and the first person imperatives are different from the justice.
Yeah, Yeah, well, let's see. No, there isn't any first person or third person imperative. That's defined as a Justin's word. I think you mean imperfect.
Oh, okay.
First and third person in perfect form.
So in the last chapter, when we were talking about imperative, it only applied to the second person.
Right.
Okay.
Right. So in the previous chapter, that only applies to second person forms.
So really, we're dealing here with...
Now, in this chapter, we're extending the concept to the first and the third person, but we call those judgmental origins.
So really, we're talking about imperative.
Yes, we are.
Is there a strong way to say that you will do this?
Well, yes, there is, but I think it more is, what you can do is use an imperfect form and an indirect imperative, that, you know, like Tishlach, you will sin.
Uh-huh.
But you have to see the context with that too.
Uh-huh.
In other words, that form by itself could mean either you will send as a prediction,
right,
or it could be you will send as a command, but the context can emphasize that.
Uh-huh.
If the context is ambiguous, you know, if you're trying to write something and make it clear, you'd probably go ahead and use the imperative form. That way there wouldn't be any question.
Right.
But if you really want, if your context was quite clear and you built up to a certain point, I always think of the mother saying to the child, you will do this, you know. And it's obviously got an imperative force to it.
Right.
It's not just a prediction of future event. It's a prediction of certainty based on force.
So what imperative is actually fulfilled in Hebrew more closely by the imperfect in that kind of usage?
In that kind of usage, it would be. And that's why they're calling it an indirect imperative, just because the form itself isn't a clear and obvious direct imperative form, but the function within the context is giving an imperative sense.
Mm-hmm.
And then... in addition to that, that's an appropriate time to add these justice and coordinated forms, which are your first and third person forms that do the same thing.
So the imperative in Hebrew is a second person thing, which isn't as imperative as the imperative in English and Greek.
Okay, I suppose you could say that. In other words, there seems to be more refinement in Hebrew without the use of a lot of auxiliary words in the imperative idea. See, in English, very commonly, the English seems to use auxiliary words for almost everything. If they want to get a passive out of an active, they'll use an auxiliary verb. You know, he was killed instead of he killed. If they want to get a subjunctive, they will say, you know, he would do this or something. They'll use a different auxiliary verb to get that sense out of it. If they want to, if in English you want to express this justice or coordinated idea, they'll say, let me do this, or let me do this, and use an auxiliary verb there. But Hebrew is just, and Greek likewise, are not using auxiliary verbs for it. They're using different forms or context plus forms or something like that to do it. So I think that's a good way to show the difference. Now, I'm not sure, I can't remember anything about, enough about German right now, and what about German in this respect? I think you use some auxiliary verbs quite frequently there.
Yeah, they have a little bit more forms.
But more forms in English.
They're as much less than Greek.
Right. So it's kind of midway between English and Greek as far as that goes. So more auxiliary verbs. And Greek does use some auxiliary things too, but not quite as much in English. Okay. Anyone else with a question on this? So that's what his point here, down here in section 107, was, that you can consider it all one paradigm. Justice for the third person, imperative for the second person, whether you're talking about that pure imperative form or this milder imperative form, indirect imperative form, or and then coordinate for the third person form, for the first person form, which will often involve a common say ending to distinguish it. Okay, then, so we have an imperative sequence starting out with an imperative, pure imperative form, or it would be true as indirect as an imperative form also, plus perfect, converted perfect. Then the third sequence would be imperative, justice, or coordinative, plus imperfect or coordinative. And you see the imperfect form is no different really than the justice form is basically no different than the imperfect form. Neither is the second person imperative in the sequence, so they just use imperfect for that. And the coordinative, though, does have a separate, you know, what I call it, say normally, so they separate those out. So look what happens here. So it says this important sequence usually has a special translation value, which should be carefully noted. The second clause expresses a purpose or result. English gets this idea so that. So what we start out with then, if we start out with an imperative, Shema, hear, and then we continue it with a coordinative, It would be here so that I may here so that I may sin. See, or here that I may sin. Or here in the next example, to full, and we continue that with the coordinative again. Right, so that I may hear. And this time the coordinative form isn't obvious. Well, I guess in neither one of these, they just used the first person form. You might see a coordinate, you might see the commentate on that also. But either way, you're still going to end up with the same situation. And then, Nelcha, let us go, from it's from Palak, and it does have a commentate, quite a what it looks like. We haven't had enough of this verb yet. One haze, we haven't had one haze yet. Okay, we'll worry about that in due time, but this looks too short, but it's the first hay is missing. And it's one of the complications involved. But Nelcha, that commentate at the end is the coordinative form. So you're starting out with coordinative there, and then you're continuing. Persons on these sequences to see. You can start off with imperative, which would be second person, where you make a command to somebody. You command somebody that this might happen, or you can use the first person, let us go that this might happen, or you can use the third person. I don't have an example of that here, but you could have something like let him pray that God may go forth hear his prayer or something. You could set up a sequence like that. So you can have first person, second person, or third person to start this thing off, and then first, second, or third person to continue it to get this purposeful idea, where either commanding one person to do something so that something else might happen, or any number. It's a very interesting sequence. But one thing to note here is that the conjunction will have this normal non-converting form here. So that's another thing to note here, because you've been used to sequences starting out with perfects and then having converted perfect. Converted imperfect forms with the lapis and doubling. This is at least the ones that continue here are either imperfects or coordinatives. You might expect the wild consecutive form here, but it's not. It's the normal form. So you have to watch for that. But you see, usually the fact that you start off with either an imperative or adjusted or coordinative usually lets you know that you're talking about something different anyway. I mean, you're not really expecting a wild consecutive form, the wapa, the doubling anymore, because you haven't started out with a perfect and then converted imperfect. You're starting out with something that's already like an imperfect, either adjusted, coordinative, or imperative. So that's a very interesting sequence. We'll have to pay close attention to that one when we do the exercise and we try to get familiar with it. Okay, so there's three interesting theories there.
These break up in the early sequence?
Could these break up a narrative sequence? Yes, in a sense, certainly they would. If you're going along in a narrative sequence with having started out with a perfect and then using converted imperfects, and then you come along and you want to say, let us go or here or something like that, as soon as you use one of these either imperative or adjusted coordinative forms, you've broken up the sequence. You're talking about something different now. And, of course, that would be immediately obvious by the fact that you did not have the wow on the front of this form, because you're saying something different now, and your series is broken as soon as you do that.
So, the definition, they sometimes just skip that all together.
Anyhow. Well, yes, but if they do that, they're not going to try to do something like this and generate confusion. Yeah. In other words, when you're trying to make a switch here and change the whole pattern, there's going to be they're going to use the regular rule to make sure that you don't get confused. Okay, now some fun. Verb is one aleph in perfect and related form. We've had one guttural, but now we want to deal with one aleph because they have some more peculiarities. And fortunately, there's only five verbs that we have to worry about here, at least in this first category. And the others pretty much do the same as the other one, guttural. There's five one aleph verbs that are that have peculiarity. And three of them we've had already. The other two are also three hay verbs, so they've got even more complexity. We'll treat with them, just treat them later. There's the verbs are five verbs part A here. Five verbs regularly have colon in the preformative with quiescence of the aleph. So colon in the preformative, that's something we haven't seen before. Colon in the main stem of the imperfect we've seen. but you know, control and so forth. But now we've got colon in the preformative. Where we had Eric before, we get colon. So achal becomes yohal. Papa type imperfect, but a colon in the preformative. That's what's unusual about the yohal. And tokal and so forth would be the verb. And then amar would be yomar. And avaz is ovaz. Yovaz, excuse me. Now the other two, avaz to bake and avaz to be willing, will be treated under three hay. Now there is a little memory phrase that I can give you to memorize these five verbs if you want. You can make up your own. This is one that I learned. And there's probably variations on them. But if, in order to remember the five verbs that are in this category, although we haven't had two of them yet, would be, I said I'm not willing to eat what she baked, lest I perish. Okay, I'll read it again for everyone. I said I'm not willing to eat what she baked, lest I perish. So you have the verb said, and I'm not willing, verb willing, the verb eat, to eat, what she baked, to bake, lest I perish. The verb perish. So all five verbs are there. I said I'm not willing to eat what she baked, lest I perish. Now don't say that to your wife. Don't think that. This is just a memory device. You know, you probably figure out some other things that you can use for that. That one would be easy to remember. Okay.
Actually, for the bachelor's money, I said I'm not willing to eat what I make.
Yes. That's even better. Okay. That's even better. We better do that for all of us so we don't get that. But these first three, you'll be responsible for now, eat, say, and perish. And the other two we'll deal more with later on, because the theme three hay also that adds more complexity to it. So the inflection of the imperfect is otherwise normal. Just the fact that you have a colon in the preformative is the main thing. Otherwise, it's normal. A colon in the preformative, and we've all already been exposed to papak type imperfect. So it becomes yokal, tokal, tokal, tokali, okal. And one thing there to note, too, that form okal, that last form in the first column, the first person form, what's unusual about that? Yeah, there's no two olives. There's not two olives there. So you have an olive that was the preformative for the first person, but you also have an olive that's the first letter of the verb. And so you just put one olive there. Yeah, they just get superimposed. And maybe an olive forte there. Something kind of So it's just okal, so watch for that. You can't really do too much else with it. I mean, two olives in a row doesn't look right anyway. Okay, then, yokalu, tokalna, tokalu, tokalna, and nokal. So it's just a matter of replacing the hirik with kolam in the paradigm. It's pretty straightforward from there. And then just watching that complexity, the fact there's only one olive in the first person singular form. Okay, then, when preceded by wa conversive, the forms yomar, tomar, and nomar are replaced by forms with segol, with a retraction of stress. Now, this applies only to this verb, to speak, not to the other ones now, just to this one verb. This is a kind of a peculiarity of this one verb. And you may have already noticed it, wayomer, watomer, and wanomer. Wayomer is the most obvious and most common one because it's a narrative sequence. You see Wayomer all the time, and he said, and he said, and he said, and he said. So that's a word you'll get very familiar with. But what's happened here is a retraction of the stress. Instead of Wayomar, it becomes Wayomer. And you change the papa to segol and retract the stress. So it's only with these forms, and even then with these forms, it's not always the case, as you'll see here, there's a little qualification to it. But when it's at the beginning of the clause, and he said, so whether you'll see this all the time, Wayomer especially. Wayomer and Wayomer pop, less frequently, but Wayomer all the time. So it's just an unusual form that has to do with, I don't know whether the philosophy is they changed the stress pattern, and then as a result of that, shorten that thing to the goal, or change the vowel to the goal, or vice versa, it doesn't really matter. But that is what happens. So can't really give you a good reason for it, and it doesn't happen with these other verbs, it just happens with this verb, Amar. Now it says, but when these stand at the end of a clause, immediately preceding what it said, the regular form with papak may be used. So you might see it one way or another. So that if it comes just before what's being said, in other words, it's introduced in a quotation, and it's coming at the end of the clause, then you may see the normal form again. So the contrast would be in these two examples. Vayomer Eirao Shema, and he said to him, hear. Now there's the this unusual form here, this retracted stress form. But if it's just, and he said hear, that could be Vayomer Shema. So in other words, if the thing that immediately follows it is the actual quotation, you may go back to the normal form. But if it's at the beginning of the clause and there's other things following the clause before the thing is said, then you'll use the point normal. Okay. So all kinds of questions there. But you will see why you're all the time, so you use the word of that. Then part B, other verbs one aleph resemble the class of one guttural verbs. So these five verbs that we mentioned here are the ones that have this peculiarity. The other ones don't take hold. They'll follow the basic pattern that you've seen already of one guttural verb. And so Asar, for example, becomes Yet Asar with the goal. Or from the just Yet Asar, you get the Kuyas and Aleph there. There's another optional form for it. But with the Segol and the preform, regardless of the stem vowels, so that's the qualification here. They all get Segol, whether it's Kolom or Pasach. Remember that before the Kolom's got, the one guttural there on page 114. The Kolom type of imperfect gets Pasach, and the Pasach type gets Segol. Here, all of them get Segol, regardless of whether they're Kolom or Pasach type. Okay. How many verbs we've had in our vocabulary yet, if any? Maybe we'll get one here. We'll get that one here. That's got more complications than you get. Okay. So the paradigm then would be just the same as the paradigm that you saw for those one guttural back there, with the goals. And there's one more point here, though. In the inflection, the segol is replaced by pasach when the rule of shawa is applied. So you do see some pasach, but it's only when. Remember those places where you get a double rule of shawa in effect? When that happens, you're going to reduce down to. You're going to change them back to pasach, is what it boils down to. So you had a shawa on the side of it. Well, you have a segol on the guttural. You're trying to reduce that to shua. You can't, so you reduce it to a pasach, a chatat pasach, and then you put a pasach on the first because there was a shua on the one before that. You can't have two shua in a row. That's kind of a full pasach. It's kind of, we've been through it a bunch before anyway. So the paradigm here for chazak, and comparing that with this paradigm for yet asor, you get yet chazak, but yet asor. But then Yekhez Ku, when the rule of Shua is applied twice, you stay with Segol on that one, but it becomes Ya'athor, Ya'athru for the one Aleph type. You wish they wouldn't do that, but that's just what happens. And in the paradigm, when you get this rule of Shua in effect, it goes back to Taha. As you can see, there's a lot of complications in this chapter. A few verbs show conflicting forms due to mixing. So as if we didn't have any other problems. Some verbs are mixed. Some of the forms follow it one way and some forms follow it the other way. The most frequently met are akaz, to hold, which has imperfect, yet-ekos, and yokes. Note an anomalous peri. It's anomalous because you never see imperfect with peri in the second syllable. I mean, you got papa type, you got full type, but you don't have peri type. This one's a peri type, I guess. It's unique. Now, what's happened here? Well, it's got an imperfect form that's like this category B one that just gets segols, but it also has an imperfect that goes, it has the cholam type like those five verbs that we saw above. So it's got mixed forms. And during the course of the paradigm, some of them certainly go one way and certainly go the other. It doesn't give a full paradigm for it here, so it's hard to tell for sure which ones do which. I suppose he's just warning you that you may see it that way. I don't know if the back will give you a full paradigm for this verb or not. And then, ahav, to love, And they give a paradigm for this one, at least give the attempted forms. And this one's pretty strange. But some of the forms you get one or the other. So look, you get ye'eha for the third person form, te'eha. Then you get there's no form in the next block here, the feminine form. But then you get either eha or oha for that first person singular form. And again, you don't get an extra aleph, but you either get seri. You might think of the seri as a lengthening, because you only got one aleph, and you would have had segol on each one of them. Maybe they figured, well, we'll only put one aleph down and we'll lengthen the segol with seri. I don't know. That's the only thing I think of. But or it could go to the colon type with the colon there. It'd be like the one we had above, okal. So it does either one. And then in the plural, the only form you've got is, well, there's the seri again. Te'e habu. Or that it says re te'habu. So what they're doing, in effect, is they put a shua in there.
Silent.
Yeah. They're putting the silent shua at the beginning of the word, which is strange. So that's just a strange verb. But hopefully it's a common verb. But it's verbs that tend to be very common in the word tend to have a big problem. Then, all regular verbs one aleph, whether a type A or B, have the same forms in the imperative. The imperatives are going to always have the zirik in the second form there. So esor, you get esor, emor, all of them get segol in the second person masculine singular imperative, and then in the feminine singular and the masculine plural they get zirik, and in the feminine plural they go back to the segol. So that's nice. And that's both whether they're type 1, type A, or type B. Mm-hmm. Okay. Vocabulary lesson 26. Nouns, two more. We've got beged, meaning garment, beged noun. And they give you the form there for the with the suffix so you know whether it's papa or hear it. So this is big B. You get to hear it there. Sha'ar, meaning gate, plural-im, also refers to the space inside the city gate used by officials for public meetings. So it's not just the entrance itself, just a gate, just a piece of wood that swings in a gate. They can refer to that, but apparently it also, people would gather in the area around the gate, near the gate, in the public meetings and that type of thing. So when they talk about they met in the gate of the city, it doesn't mean that thousands of people were crammed into the doorway, and there's an area around there that is referred to. Okay, then asir means prisoner. Verbs, we get some one aleph verbs here, and these have a tendency to look public alike. So you got avaz, to perish or be destroyed or die. We've got achaz, meaning to seize, grasp, take hold of. Asar, to bind, fetter, or take prisoner. Ahav, to love, and of course the full paradigm given here is very equal. Kara, just a three, guttural, so to tear or rend. Asak, meaning to open, and that's where our little vowel point comes from.
That's
you put an X through that. That's a mistake. Oh. See that kind of heavy dot under the
page? That's a big vowel point.
Yeah, it's either a very massive vowel point or a mistake. It is a mistake. It should be entered on there. Okay. And,
you think it would be closed.
I think it's just an open sound is what they're getting at. Okay, then your mouth is open. Maybe your mouth is open when you make it. But that would be true of karma. Any mouth for that matter. Sagar, to close. And gadal, to become great. Of course, we've already had gadol, the adjective form. Large or great.
It's a
stated
verb?
Yes, right. A stated verb. To be or become great. Grow up, reach maturity. The growing up gets more into a process, but to be or become great, that would be it. That would be a stated verb for sure. Okay. 5 minutes, yes.
I want to ask a couple of questions back away.
Okay.
As far as this commentary ending,
Mm-hmm.
Is there any way that we would get that to confused with anything? Or an indigo?
Well, no, I don't think so. You wouldn't confuse it. We've had lots of common tapes.
Yeah.
But, we've had a directional common tape that we've added on this, but it's only a class of words that do it, it's not verbs. So we're not sticking that on the verbs. We have common tape for feminine, forming a feminine adjective. You wouldn't get confused with that. Not with this either. This is an imperfect form, so you've got this prefix on it. You're going to either have a nun or an ala prefix on it, and a verb form. I don't think there's anything you really get confused with. Then there are some verb forms that have common say, and you've heard feminine verb forms, but they'd be too short, they wouldn't have the prefix. So I don't think you'll get confused with anything. First thing is that the word looks long, and you see the prefix, either the ala or the adjective, you obviously have to get with any trouble. I suppose if you've never seen the word before, about the only thing you might get it confused with is those feminine nouns that had a closed syllable for the first syllable. There were a number of them, like no kama and so forth. You might, in looking quickly at it and so forth, you might have a problem at first, but if you just remember that these things are going to, if it doesn't have a nun or an aleph on it, then it can't be one of these. If it does have a nun or aleph, that's going to be your most likely candidate. Yeah, that's another thing. You look at words first, what's going on here. So it's usually enough tip off in the context of this. I don't think you'd ever have a real problem with this if you gathered all the information. It's only at first glance that you might get it accepted.
The other one I was wondering about was I wanted to make sure I understood that section C, 107.
Okay.
Are you saying that there are, in essence, six different ways
that
you can write or gain that phrase so that? So if it shows up in any one of those ways, or if we translate any one of those ways, it's okay, properly.
Right, exactly. In other words, you could start out with imperative and then have imperfect following. You could have imperative and cohortative following. You could have justive and imperfect following. Justive and cohortative following. You could have cohortative to start, imperfect following, or cohortative and cohortative. And the imperfect, and that's, they're just not making any distinction, but that imperfect could be rendered like either justive or imperative, because the forms aren't any different. But it's just an imperfect form, but it's getting this kind of an idea. And once you say, so that he may, or so forth, you're obviously getting just a type meaning with a third person and indirect imperative.
Do these words have the same number across? I was trying to determine if there's a... It seemed like some of them had a number switch because, from the imperative...
Oh, no, they don't.
I heard it.
Right,
but...
See, because you can even put a number down here. See, in the first column, imperative is second person, justice is the third person, and coordinate is always first person. And so if you start out with an imperative, which is second person, then go to cohortative on the second side, you're going from second to first. The persons are changing. Because, and see, the reason is that one person might do something in order that somebody else might do something, you see. See, for example, here, so that I may sin. The here is second person. You're telling somebody else to hear so that I may sin. Or so you're going from second to first person. Or write so that I may hear. Same thing, second to first person. Or let us go that he may find. There you're going from first person, let us go that he may find, third person. So there you're going from cohortative to really adjusted type meaning or imperfect.
So then it's like saying, in essence, you hear so that...
Right.
So that I send another specific pointer to somebody.
Mm-hmm. See, you can imagine God saying, here so that I can send my prophet, or here so that I can send deliverance, or something like that. there is a cause and effect kind of situation going on. One thing is being done so that something else can be done. But it may be one person doing one thing and another person doing the other thing. It may be the same, too. In other words, he could say, here, so that you can receive and believe, so forth. You could say second person all the way, you could say first person all the way, or third person all the way, or you might mix them.
Is there another way with this cohortative? He's left out of possibility here, as far as, may I hear so that you may, this or that, he's left out the imperative on the second side.
The reason he's done that is just because I think what he really means here is that the second sequence is going to use imperfect forms, but they will be either imperative, I mean, if there's second person, that's the second and third person one.
Right.
And he's just not using distinction justice and imperative here, so that he's just making it more general with an imperfect form here, because I think he just wants to stretch it out so that it might be justice, it might be imperative, it might just be imperfect, that's a simple prediction of what's going to happen.
But the imperative from this last section does have a difference.
Yes. So yeah, it wouldn't be that formal imperative. If it was imperative, it would only be the indirect imperative. It'd be in perfect form. So he's using that to discuss the form. But you won't see an imperative form.
So actually,
you won't see a coordinate form.
So actually, you're not going to have this polite command in the second position for second person. What he's saying, because if it was imperfect used in a this way,
mm-hmm.
more directly. Is it just saying it doesn't occur?
Well, no, it would just be that the form is no different than a normal imperfect form would be. You can still get that meaning. See, you could still
right.
say...
But I'm saying you can't go the other way. You can't get the,
you're right there, yeah.
So is that saying that you don't do that?
You could still stop it. You could use an imperative and then say, like John said, to put a nah on it. You know, and then you kind of soften it. You get to think, I mean, that's perhaps why they don't even bother to do it, because they can do it that way. Yeah, I see what you're saying now. So you're not using the indirect imperative to start off with something like this.
Yeah,
second. So maybe that's not the way they do it. And that indirect imperative, since they have an imperative form, I think that your indirect imperative form is going to be pretty rare. It won't be used that often, and when it does, it's probably in a pretty unique context or a unique situation. Okay, well, tomorrow we'll go ahead and do lesson 26 then. It's not a very long one, unfortunately.
How are we doing right what?
Let's see. We'll do A in class and B in class orally, so we'll just do C and D. Oh, we're going to have a reading on this one.
Yeah.
Okay. So just C and D for tomorrow is all you have to do in the rest of the I'm trying to get those tests back to you tomorrow, but I can't promise for sure. Depends on how many you missed, how many.
No, I won't be around.
Yeah, that's what's easy. If everybody gets them right, boy, it's easy to grade tests.
So the longer the test goes, the lower the credit.
Yeah, the longer it takes to get tests back, the lower the credit.
You're going to want to.